It is my great honor and pleasure to be with all of you today. Thank you. I truly learned so much from all those who have offered presentations, and I don't know so much of what I could add. Such brilliance, such insight, such experience in such a practical and caring way. I truly thank all of our presenters for coming and giving your invaluable presence to this event. I'm a very simple person. I went to one semester of a junior college and decided to take a summer break and visit Europe, and ended up getting my higher education in a cave in the Himalayan jungles. So I see things in very simple ways. And from what I heard from all of our esteemed speakers today, I came to a simple conclusion. We know the golden rule: do unto others as you wish them to do to you. A true doctor in spirit is one who, from the core of their hearts, will treat each and every one of their patients as they would want a doctor to treat them if they were in the patient's situation. That's quality of life. In the world we live in today, people have been so distracted from a meaningful, purposeful, or happy life because there's so much propaganda that success comes from the quantity of what you have: your money, your power, your fame, your knowledge in regard to intellectualization. And in the pursuit of quantity, people forget that there cannot be happiness in ourselves, nor can we give happiness to others unless we have a quality life. Essentially, everyone's looking for pleasure. The Brahma Sutra tells Ananda Mayobhyashat. It's something every living being has in common. The insects, the birds, the beasts, every category of human beings is looking for pleasure. And part of this pursuit of pleasure is to avoid pain, because pain disturbs pleasure. I once saw a little girl, about 7 or 8 years old. She was from an extraordinarily wealthy family. Her parents provided a beautiful home, every type of toy and plaything, beautiful clothes, beautiful ornaments. But they didn't have time, nor did they see the need to give her the care, the affection, and the appreciation that the heart needs. She looked very pretty, but she lived in misery. Her heart was crying for affection, and she was given everything else. As far as I could see, that's a serious disease in human society for people from all ages. What is real suffering? What is real happiness? It's very much a thing of the heart. Give a person $1 billion or $1 trillion or rupees, if they don't have somebody to love and they don't know how to love others, it's all superficial. It's like an empty shell. In every profession, our true success is in how we're experiencing a meaningful, purposeful life that brings happiness to ourselves and which empowers us to give happiness to others. I'll share a simple story that really affected me. Every year, Bhaktivedanta Hospital has a cataract eye camp in a simple village in Uttar Pradesh, near Vrindavan. Barasana is the name of the village. And thousands of people from other villages, which are quite distant, they come because they have problems. We have a dental camp and an eye camp. None of them speak English, but I go there and I speak to them through translators. And for most of them, they have never been to a dentist or seen a doctor in their life. Simple people. Some volunteer doctors, nurses, and so many other devotees and people come to help. And one particular doctor, ophthalmologist, highly educated, quite wealthy, quite famous, came from Mumbai, from his comfortable home to live in this little village. There's no heat. It's the winter. It's kind of muddy all over the place. And he's treating these simple villagers who are mostly really old, uneducated, and just wearing very raggedy clothes. They're all in poverty. He removed a cataract from a lady. She was probably in her late 80s. Couldn't spell her name. Probably never went to school. Just was wearing a really old, faded, torn up sari. Had only a couple teeth in her mouth. He took the bandage off her eye, and she could see. She was so happy. She was so happy. In her own very simple village way, she thanked the doctor by beating him on the head with her hand. She was beating him. And as she was beating, she was saying, "May Radharani bless you with love for Krishna." He's beating her and beating her. "May Radharani bless you with love for Krishna." He never felt so happy in his life. It wasn't just what she said. She was blessing him. Because he made a difference in a person's life in such a way. And he started coming to this eye camp with his family every year. It's the highlight of his year. he experienced something very special that everybody hears and knows but doesn't really understand. Then when we get stuff, we could make a living. But it's only when we really deeply appreciate the joy of giving that we make a life. This holds true for people in every profession. In the Bhagavad Gita, Bhoktaram Yagatapasam Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. One explanation of this verse is we are not the proprietors of anything. This is a universal spiritual principle. That whatever we have, ultimately, we are completely dependent on higher powers to receive it. We may think we're great, but we need the sun for its light and heat. We need the air to breathe. We need Mother Earth to provide seeds. We need rain for anything to grow. If our mother and father didn't selflessly take care of us, we could have never survived. We are all, at all times, whoever we are, totally dependent on gifts that are beyond our control. That's just being honest. Sometimes when people ask me, what does it mean to be humble? Because there's so much arrogance in the world today. One explanation of humility is just to be honest. I am completely dependent on so many gifts that are coming from God and from so many gifts that are coming from God through so many people and so many wonderful gifts of nature. And to be grateful. An arrogant heart cannot be grateful. An arrogant heart always feels, I deserve something else. I deserve to be more. I'm more. And we can have a pretense of gratitude, but it's not real. In gratitude, there's joy. If you think you deserve something great and then you get it, are you grateful for it? If you really don't think you deserve it and somebody gives it to you, you're very grateful. In the Gita, it tells us that real integrity, real evolution of consciousness is when we are grateful to serve, to reciprocate. For one who much is given, much is expected. We are caretakers. It was said by one of our speakers, and it really moved my heart, that we should actually see the presence of God in our patients. This is a universal principle. In the Bible, Jesus tells, you treat me the way you treat the least of all people. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the fourth chapter, Krishna gives a definition of knowledge. This is the type of knowledge that transforms our hearts, our lives, and gives us the power to transform other people's hearts and lives. True knowledge, Krishna tells, is to see every living being as part of me, as in me, and as mine. To the degree we actually connect with God within our own hearts, to that degree, aham bija pratapita, we will appreciate that whoever is coming is a child of God. This is the Vedic culture. This is the heritage of India. The heritage of India is not exporting software engineers to Silicon Valley. That's nice, but we shouldn't lose the substance of foundation of this culture. When my guru, Srila Prabhupada, was in London, he was asked, challenged by a journalist, why did you come to our country? Because he's a Swami teaching Bhagavad Gita. He said, you British people, you ruled over India for over a century, and you took the best wealth you could find to bring to London. So many jewels, so much of our economic prosperity. Whatever treasures you found, you tried to bring it to London. But you forgot the most important treasure, India's culture, India's spiritual heritage. I have come to give you freely what you forgot to take. So we should not forget this. This is Bharatvarsha, Dharma Bhumi, the very foundational principle of the heritage of India is in this understanding. The Vedas tell that when a guest comes to your home, you have to see that God has sent them. Our guru said, anybody who comes to our temple, we should know how we treat them is how we treat Krishna. If you're truly making a connection with the Lord who's on the altar, then you will see his presence, his intimate child in the heart of all beings. Bhagavad Gita tells wisdom, realize knowledge. Vidyavanaya sampane brahmani gabihastini suni chaiva svapakicha pandita samadarshana. These are standards that we should put in our life. Real wisdom is when we see all living beings with equal vision. That means we care. We want to make a difference. And the holistic approach in whatever our profession may be, and particularly today in medical practice, is our body, mind, and soul to actually appreciate and recognize how we can uplift the health of a person's body, mind, and soul. Through medicines, through therapies, whatever it may be, we can give relief and health to the physical body. But to actually make a difference in a person's life, that's only a little piece of it. If a person's mind is terribly disturbed, it's going to be miserable, whatever his state the body's in. To care, to give respect, to give appreciation to a person, to give compassion, to give a sense of love to that person, gives fulfillment and health to their mind. And to be an instrument of a higher power than ourselves, to give them a connection to that higher power that we're all dependent on, gives fulfillment to the soul, to the living force that's seeing through the eyes and hearing through the ears, that's the very source of life within us. Some of our doctors from Bhaktivedanta Hospital were telling me, when there was an earthquake in Gujarat some years ago, there was a lot of requirements for orthopedic surgeons and other people were suffering. So many people, their homes were destroyed. Their relatives were killed. Their shops were demolished. How much happiness do they get when you put a cast on their arm to heal their broken bones? We need to do that. But spiritual care, they need hope. They need a reason to live. To give them an understanding of the eternal soul beyond birth and beyond death. To teach them how they could commune through God with even their lost loved ones. To give them tools in which they could make that spiritual connection and find that emotional peace through it. And of all the services we performed, we were giving food, we were rebuilding houses, we were giving medicines, we were fixing broken limbs. What was appreciated the most, what was most needed? And that was giving that inner connection and hope to their life. A doctor in whatever situation of a patient should give that patient hope. If they have a terminal disease and they're going to die, we should give them some tools to go beyond this lifetime and give hope. If a person doesn't really feel trust and faith and hope from the doctor, it's going to create a very, very negative mental situation, and that is going to seriously impede their physical, mental, and spiritual growth. I think we've all experienced it. When I was a little boy growing up north of Chicago, if I was sick and my mother really needed some medical help, she would call the doctor, and within a half hour he would be at our house. And anybody could afford it, whoever we were. Even when I was 9 years old, my father went into total bankruptcy, but there was never a worry about medical help. You just call him, he comes. Now in America, my father's 92. I see he's in a suffering condition. condition. He doesn't know if he's going to live or die. He calls the doctor, and they give him an appointment in 3 weeks. And there's nothing available until then. If you want something more, then you talk to the secretary on the phone, and she'll tell you what to do. If you really need something else, then just go to a local hospital, to the emergency ward. And I saw, in many situations like this, him and many others, they become really hopeless and depressed. Now I challenge that doctor. If you were in the position of this patient, is this the way you would like your doctor to treat you? Absolutely no. That means no integrity. It's just about money. From a human point of view, that's a worthless life. Humanity is to care. Share your care is what some of our doctors have created. That's what it means to care, is to share. Seva, a sacred word in Sanskrit, means to serve with compassion. To serve with love. This is the greatest need in the world. If business people, industrialists, doctors, nurses, what to speak of religious people, swamis and priests, we have our issues too. It's not much difference. If we don't clean our hearts, if we don't understand the true value of giving, if we don't understand that devotion and love is the foundational principle of what makes life worthy of living, then we're part of the problem, not part of the solution. In our medical schools, in all of our schools, if we don't teach our children the value of character, the value of compassion, what are we really giving them? There's a saying, if you lose your wealth, you lose nothing. If you lose your health, you lose something. If you lose your character, you've lost everything. But how do we teach the next generation this? Through our example. Krishna tells in Bhagavad Gita, what leaders do, the common people follow. And people in medical profession, doctors, lawyers, are really leaders in society. People are coming to you when they're desperate. They're looking for hope. They're looking for relief. They're looking for liberation from their doctors. You're leaders. And the young people see this. We have to lead by our example. If there's a strong foundation in a building, even the most powerful storms cannot move it. But if there's a weak foundation, when the storm comes, the building crumbles. It's that spiritual connection. That connection to something within ourselves, the soul, and God's grace. Humility, gratitude. When we have that, we find peace. We find meaning. We find love. And then whatever storms come in this world, it cannot move the integrity or the fulfillment of our life. Through the way we perform our work, to exemplify these principles is the greatest contribution we could make to humanity. And I see in this wonderful conference today, this is the theme that is like the thread that's going through all the different flowers of everyone's explanations and appreciations. Satsang means we empower and inspire each other because we need that. There's too many powerful storms of distraction, weapons of mass distraction are constantly bombarding us. But conferences like what I'm seeing today is beautiful. People with real values, people with real experience and wisdom are coming together to share. And as we share, we grow. The people in this room today, if we share our care and have these values, we can truly make a very significant difference in changing the world. If we don't think that's possible, then we miss the greatest opportunity in life. But we can make a great difference in the world. Thank you very much.
Swamiji will take a few questions. You can write on a piece of paper.
While the audience writes a question, I have a question already from one of our speakers. Somebody can really argue out this and challenge. Swami, you've been talking about spirituality.
Can you speak more in the microphone?
Somebody can really challenge and say that you talk about spirituality as the means to bring about peace in the world. But there are a lot of practicing religionists who, in the name of spirituality, are the worst enemies of humanity. So how does spirituality really bring about peace? Because the experience seems to say otherwise.
I could say that about medicine too. There are surgeons who tell a person, you know, you need this surgery and let me do it, and they'll steal your kidneys away from you and then sell them for huge amounts of money in some other country. Yes? So does that mean all surgeons are bad? The concept of medicine is the spirit is there to cure people. In days before such a commercial greed came into the medical world, doctors were people with very high integrity. They took to this profession not just to become rich, they took to this profession because they really wanted to help people. And if such a doctor becomes really wealthy, that's wonderful. But that is not the priority. The priority is to represent what a doctor is supposed to be. And if they understand that properly, then they really will help people's health. But there are doctors who are very immoral. And for the purpose of greed, they have killed people, exploited people. So does that mean the medical profession is bad? In the name of spirituality, there are people who exploit the concept of God to exploit people. In the name of a loving God, they kill, they terrorize, there's violence. In every great religion, humility is the basic principle of religion. But in the name of God and religion, we become so arrogant that we have to prove the obsessive need in my heart that I am superior to you. And we pass judgment and hatred on anyone different. That has absolutely nothing to do with religion. As exploiting a patient does not have anything to do with real medicine. So we have to understand spirituality in its essence. Its spirituality has always been very holistic. In India, in the Vedic times, and even as of 100 years ago, it was mostly people who really studied the Vedas, who lived real simple, who were the Vaidyas, the doctors. And they really knew how to cure people. And they did cure people. It's not that 200 years ago, diseases were so much more than now. In today's world, you know, the stress, the pressures, the arrogances, the pollutions, everything, it's all interconnected to greed. So if we really want to make a difference in the world, we all have to take the responsibility. In spiritual life, if we're representing God, then we really have to represent the love, the peace, the compassion of God, who sees every living being as his own children. As a doctor, all the great medical gurus and doctors throughout history who have handed down and developed the medical profession, as a doctor, we are representing something higher than ourselves. We are representing God's grace. We're representing the whole medical profession for all doctors throughout the world. And we see in many of these examples that we have heard about of doctors getting beaten, their houses being burned, being sued in the courts, and all of these things. Because certain people are misusing their authority and their position, so many others are getting punished for it. We have to take responsibility for what we represent. Whoever we are, in whatever profession we're in. And that especially holds true in religion, and in my opinion, medicine also. I'd like to give a little example of something that move my heart. Because we see the challenges on the screen before. It was said that at one time, doctors were seen like gods. But now they're seen like criminals. Yes, there's some truth to that. But for each and every one of us, individually and collectively, to grow, in whatever storm that comes, we have to see an opportunity. With these things happening, we could just defend ourselves, which is required. But how could we grow through this? What is the opportunity in it? Years ago, our Bhaktivedanta Hospital was attacked, violently attacked. To such a degree, the hospital had to close. It's not that they did anything seriously wrong. I'm not going to go into any details. It was a political situation. The hospital was closed for 1 year. Doctors, nurses, staff, everyone had to either somehow or other get their own little jobs, and if will the hospital ever open again? And I remember at a certain point, I was called on the phone. They said, we should just rent out this building and do something somewhere else. And we came together and came to a conclusion. That's not the answer. Let's see what we could learn from this situation. Let us very honestly reevaluate what our purpose is, what is the meaningful reason that we have this hospital, what is our true responsibilities. We started giving much higher salaries to the people who were just helping in various more menial ways. More beds, totally for charity. It became more of a missionary hospital. The mission was to help people physically, emotionally, and spiritually. We're here to serve them. We're here to honor them. We're here to appreciate them. We're here to show God's love for them by helping them in every possible way, the patients, the relatives of the patients, everyone. And that took sacrifices for everyone. But all the devotees and all the people and all the volunteers, whoever, were willing to make a sacrifice of even taking a loss for a higher purpose of being a hospital of compassion rather than being distracted from that. And within a year, the hospital was making many times more money than ever before. But people loved us because they felt we cared about them. So what's happening in the medical world in India today, it's a wake-up call. And wake-up calls are not negative things. We can transform the negative into positive, curses into blessings. Each and every one of us, individually and collectively, let us reevaluate what our real purpose is and what our service is to God and humanity. And try to refine that. and then we could grow. People don't like rain in the cities, but at the farms, they like rain. Because in the cities, it's just an inconvenience. But in the farms, it's what makes the food grow for us. I remember when my father went through total bankruptcy. I was a little boy. He always sang a song. When April showers come your way, they bring the flowers that bloom in May. So the difficulties that come in life, they can have a sacred purpose if they help us to really focus on what's truly important, what's truly my Dharma.
Thank you for a beautiful, elaborate answer. I think the last thing you said was extremely significant. You changed the whole focus of the conference by saying that what we are really scared of in terms of what's happening to the medical profession is don't want to be defensive, but it's a wake-up call. A time to change, time to evaluate, time to introspect. I think that's very, very beautiful. And so essentially, Swamiji, you're probably saying that to be the way we need to be as doctors, we have to be strong believers in God. But every doctor, we have to be strong believers in God. We have to be strongly theistic in our approach to the medical profession. But not every doctor may be a theist. So in this case, can he still be an ethical doctor? Can he still be a spiritual doctor? Or does he have to do something to actually be called as, the way you're saying, carry the grace of God to his patients?
Whatever we have can be lost. We have all seen eloquent speakers, deep thinkers, who due to some medical situation, they can't talk anymore, they can't remember anything anymore. People who are incredibly skillful in various arts or practices, and they get a stroke or something and they can't do anything anymore. So whatever skills and intelligence we have, the spiritual principle is that it is entrusted to us by a higher power than our own. And while we have it, to use it in harmony with that higher power. There may be different names of God, but to recognize that there is a higher power, to humble ourselves and try to live in harmony with that higher power through living with integrity and compassion is important for everyone. From whatever religion or whatever absence of religion. But that is a principle of spirituality. As was said in this conference today, there are different levels of God realization. And one level, which is very, very important, which we can't skip over, is compassion for other living beings. If you try to skip over that to a really high, lofty concept of following scripture, it's not religion at all. I hope that sort of answers your question.
Perfect. Thank you. Do we have time for more questions, Dr. Kavita? Everybody knows that within ourselves, we're talking about going within. So this question is relevant to that concept of going within. When we do something wrong or something right, there is an inner voice called as a conscience. How does a person, in a doctor profession especially, because we're talking about unethical practice, how do we really awaken and strengthen that inner call called the conscience, which would itself be a monitor from preventing us from doing the wrong things and guide us towards doing the right things? As a spiritual leader, how would you, you know, teach all of us this way of really connecting to that inner conscience, the inner voice, to the right thing, and just be righteous in our behavior?
Do people still listen to radio or television? It's important to tune into the frequency clearly to get a clear message. When I was young, we had radios in our cars with little dials. And I remember to tune into the station, you'd be going, you would go, then you start hearing a voice, if you go too far, and it, just to tune in, then you could clearly hear the voice. Otherwise, it's static. Or even worse, is you turn to a different channel and they're saying something opposite, and you think this is the channel. Yes? It's a similar situation. There are many frequencies and many channels that are providing so many voices from within us. There's the channel of our greed. There's the channel of our selfish passions. There's a channel of our arrogance. There's a channel of our anger, and so many illusions. And usually many people, they just tune into those channels, those frequencies. And some people even think that's God in my heart speaking. That's where this kind of violence and arrogance is coming into religion. They think they're tuning into God, but it's their anger and their insecurities and their arrogance that they're tuning into. If you tune into the right station, you can judge a tree by its fruit. It will make us an instrument of peace and love and self-control and humility. So we require tuning into the right frequency, and that's what all spiritual practices are for, to help us to truly tune in to that real voice of real conscience within us. That's what a guru is supposed to do. The guru doesn't claim I'm God. The guru is helping us, giving us spiritual practices by which we can tune in to the true God that's within our heart and his heart and everyone's heart. Through meditation, through prayer, through seva. In our tradition, we chant this beautiful mantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. To help tune us in to that inner compassion, that inner voice of God in the soul that's within us. It's a science. Otherwise, the tendency is we put our faith and trust in all these other voices which distract us. Many of the speakers that spoke prior today were describing through their, we have police commissioners, we have lawyers, we have nurses, we have doctors, we have administrators, we have educators. Now, little Swami's up here speaking. So many people from different fields of life and they're sharing this, their experience and their realization. How true compassion and true meaning and fulfillment in life comes from integrating our professions, our family situations, our bodies and our minds with our souls, with basic universal spiritual principles. And when we can share this message and help each other to go deeper and deeper into this need, then not only will our lives be full of meaning and joy, but we could truly spread that meaning and joy in wonderful ways throughout Mumbai and Maharashtra and India and Mother Earth. Thank you very much.